The Dave Llewellyn Podcast is sponsored by Sherm's Candy, a Michigan-based company that specializes in awesome-tasting candy that's in the shape of Michigan. And welcome back to the Dave Llewellyn Podcast. We cover sports stories, newsmakers, and difference makers in our communities and across Southeast Michigan. And today, we're going to get a little bit of a history lesson in the city of Detroit. Dan Austin, longtime journalist, author, creator of the website historicdetroit.org, and since May of 23, he's been the communications director at the Michigan Central Station, the old train depot that has new life thanks to Bill Ford and Ford Motor Company as a site for its workers, its technology, its mobility moving forward. But we welcome Dan Austin to the Dave Llewellyn Podcast. Dan, thanks for the time today, and I'm really excited about this conversation.
Yeah, well, it's great to see you again, Dave. It's been a while, and it is an honor to be on your latest venture.
Well, I appreciate that so much. I mentioned Michigan Central Station, so let's start there. You're Director of Communications at the Michigan Central Station. What has been done to that building to save it, to renovate it, to repurpose it? It was, for years, maybe the largest, most egregious sign of blight in the city of Detroit. And now it is a showplace and a gem for this city.
I think the short answer is what hasn't been done to it.
Yeah.
The building was abandoned since 1988 and was in ruins. And as you said, it became the poster child for urban decay, ruin porn. You know, when you came into Detroit from Canada, you saw it from the bridge. It was the welcome mat and not exactly the image that Detroit wanted to put out there of itself. And now it's been turned completely around, and now it is absolutely the image that you want people to think of when they think of Detroit. It's a symbol of hope, of confidence in the future of this city. And I just never thought I would ever see it happen.
Yeah.
You know, it was one of those things where the best we were hoping for was that it would be like our Colosseum of Rome, right? The ruins of a once great civilization. And now to have it serve as this place where the future, not just of Detroit, but in many ways the world, is being forged. It's just pinch me, Dave. Like, How are we here? I'm thankful we're here, but how are we here?
Yeah. I'm with you. Never thought we'd see the day. I did a story at Channel 7 about midway through the project. Scaffolding was all up inside, and then went back, not when they had the first, you know, doors first opened to the public after the grand reopening, but in December we went on a tour and saw the Michigan Central Station. And what a job. What a job they did. And as you say, you know, what a gem and a beacon of hope for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. It looks like it hasn't been closed a single day, let alone several decades. And I think the thing for me as a preservationist, a building hugger, is how much of it was saved.
Yeah.
You know, I walked in the first time I got a look at it, I was still working for Mayor Duggan, and he was doing the State of the City there. And I walked in and looked up at the Guastavino ceiling, and I'm like, oh, man, they replaced the ceiling. They got rid of all the Guastavino tiles. They didn't. They hand-cleaned every single one of them.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, it's like that kind of attention to detail. On, that's the kind of thing you would expect with the restoration of Notre Dame, right? Like a World Heritage Site. You wouldn't think of that when you think of a restoration of a historic Detroit building. But in many ways, Michigan Central Station deserves to be on that list, right? I mean, it played such a crucial role in the history of this city. And I think a lot of Metro Detroiters, especially those who were ashamed or embarrassed yeah. to say that they were from the Detroit area when Detroit was down on its luck, I think that we lose sight of the fact that this city played a monumentally important role in the story of not only this country, but of the world, right? Yeah. And it wasn't just cars. It was, you know, everything from, yes, cars to Motown, techno music, to manufacturing. I mean, I could blow you away with boring minutia, like one of the world's largest producers of ink yeah. was based in Southwest Detroit, and they're still in business today. They're part of the Koch Brothers enterprise. They're no longer based in Detroit. But I mean, like, we were changing the world in so many ways.
Well, and we're going to talk, and sorry to interrupt, we're going to talk about some of that too in the history and the beginnings and the 1920s when many of these buildings that we revere and want to talk about were built in the city of Detroit. But, you know, remember, right? Detroit was the fourth largest city in the country at one time. Paris of the Midwest, right? I mean, 2 million people. I mean, wow. And what resulted, sad as it was part of our story as well.
That's absolutely true. And I think that's one of the other things, kind of circling back to the train station, is that there wasn't an attempt to try to whitewash or to get rid of all of that, that chapter of the station's life, right? You walk through the building and you still see where Mother Nature did a number on some of the Mankato stone.
Yeah.
That erosion is still there. You know, the graffiti in the hallway on the east side of the building was kept. They initially, the state and others, didn't want us to keep it, but we made the argument that this is a significant piece of this building's mm-hmm. story and our city's story.
Yeah.
And so we won the argument and were able to keep that hallway.
The millions and millions that Bill Ford committed to this project, you know, he can't ever make that money back. I mean, let's be honest, right? But, you know, what it has done in terms of preservation and as a sign, as you say, and the possibilities for that building and our region going forward, it is an important thing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't talk finances.
I understand.
But at the same time, I don't think, one, it's an apples to apples kind of thing. You know, the building it's not just a hotel. It's not just an office building. It's really a beacon, a monument, you know, the investment was not just in a building, it was an investment in Clarktown and Southwest Detroit and the city itself. And, you know, Bill Ford said frequently that a lot of people, especially young people, they don't want to work in a generic cinder block building next to a freeway or something in the valley. They want to work in places that inspire, you know, what could be more inspirational than not only a beautiful Beaux-Arts 1913 landmark, but also the story behind it, yeah. right? This monument that was built when Detroit was just about ready to hit its peak, fell down to its lowest lows. I think we all agree that bankruptcy is about as low as a yeah. municipality could get.
Right.
You know, being used in disaster scenes and Transformers and whatever Michael Bay movies, and then to be reborn, it is a magnet that is bringing talent here. And right next door at New Lab in the former post office / book depository building, you know, we're already seeing 100 startups from all over the world, not just Michigan, not just the country, coming to Detroit, of all places, because this is where they want to be. This is where they know they can take their businesses to the next level. And yeah, the train station is a huge part of that get, right? And I think as we continue to roll out public spaces, When the hotel opens, there are a lot of things that are going on around us. The soccer stadium that's going to go on the old hospital site just to the west of the station. I mean, pop some popcorn and take a seat because I think that you're going to see just a tremendous amount of positive change in that area, in that Corktown Southwest area. And, like I said, it's not about just getting your money back, or trying to make money on one development project. It's not that kind of deal.
I'm hoping that one day, you mentioned the hotel, I'm hoping one day, and it won't be the same as it was when the building first opened, certainly, but would love to see train service to some degree back at the Michigan Central Station. And I know that's been discussed. Man, I'd love to see that happen just again for the historical purposes of the building and its original use. I think that'd be cool, whether it happens or not.
Well, where our CEO Josh Seierfan has said it loud for the people in the back that Michigan Central supports passenger rail, and we're working on it. There are a lot of players involved, especially when you're talking about international rail travel. But as I was heading out to the Cancer Center at U of M, dealing with I-94 traffic, it's like, man, I sure wish I could just hop on a train. From Detroit and just take it to Ann Arbor instead. So, stay tuned. Still a ways to go, but there are a lot of people who are pushing for this.
Would love to see it happen. Dan Austin, the creator of historicdetroit.org, my guest on this episode of the Dave Llewellyn podcast. We'll pause for a moment and just want to say again how thrilled we've been to have Sherm's Candy on board as a sponsor of the Dave Llewellyn podcast. Sherm's Candy is a Michigan-based company specializing in delicious candies, all shaped like the Mitten State itself. Choose from classic Michigummies for a delightful taste of gummy goodness, or if you're looking for a richer flavor experience, indulge in decadent chocolate Michigummies. And for those who prefer a tart and tangy treat, pucker up for sour Michigummies. Sherm's Candy doesn't forget about your furry friends either. They offer Mishapups, a tasty treat made just for dogs. Many fine retailers across the state of Michigan carry Sherm's Candy, or you can order online at shermscandy.com. Shurms, shermscandy.com. On this episode of the Dave Llewellyn podcast, talking with Dan Austin, we touched on Michigan Central Station, much more to come. But let's start at this point, Dan, with historicdetroit.org, the website you created. I mentioned you're a journalist. You worked at the Detroit Free Press and other papers across the country. You've been in PR as well. You worked for Mayor Mike Duggan as Deputy Director of Communications. You're at Michigan Central Station now, leading communications efforts there. So how has historicdetroit.org fit into all of that day job work for you over the years?
With a lot of shoehorning. it fits in because it is my passion. And when I started historicdetroit.org, and actually before that, I had worked on a website called buildingsofdetroit.com. Shortly after I arrived back in Detroit in 2006, and it's all storytelling, Dave. I mean, you're a journalist yourself, and it's all about the stories. And I think that when I started Historic Detroit, or buildingsofdetroit.com, it was a much different time in the city, right?
Yeah. I mean,
buildings were being flattened left and right without any thought, any regard for what, not only what they might be, but what they were. And so it was important that those stories be chronicled, because I have always believed that buildings are made up of much more than just brick or mortar. They're made up of the stories of a people, of a city. There's a reason why when people go to Europe, they don't go check out necessarily the new stuff. They want to see the old. And so that's why that all started. And obviously, post bankruptcy in 2013, the first book that I did was an answer to all the ruin porn, where I believe there were 12 locations in there. They were all abandoned. And within a decade, they were all either renovated or a couple of them were torn down. Michigan Theater being kind of an outlier is a parking garage. But I mean, it blows your hair back, or it would blow my hair back if the cancer didn't take my hair. But it blows your hair back to think about how much things have changed in this city in just the past decade and change. I mean, obviously not all change is good. You got to make sure that you're looking out for the community, those who've been here. Obviously you want to avoid things like gentrification and pricing people out and all of that. But at the same time, just when you're looking at those historic buildings, I mean, I remember coming down for Tigers games at Tiger Stadium in the 80s and asking my dad, why are there trees growing on top of those buildings? Like
It was a common
downtown.
occurrence.
Downtown was littered with vacant skyscrapers. And now the last couple that are still standing are under renovation. The Park Avenue building, I haven't heard an update on Park and Adams. And then the Gilbert f family is of companies is doing the Broadway Exchange building over on Broadway. But like everything else has been fixed up. And it's wild that you would see not only that much redevelopment in such a short period of time, but in a city where there was basically no development for a couple of decades.
But David Derrida, a developer in Detroit, when one of the stories that I did with him, we're on top of one of the buildings, can't remember what it was right now, talking about development in Detroit. And he said, yes, as bad as, things got, some cities, more of these buildings would have been taken down, but in Detroit, they were just closed up, abandoned. And he said, how fortunate Detroit was that these buildings were still standing. I mean, empty, but still standing. So the opportunity did exist for them to be saved, by the likes of the Gilberts and others who have Illich and Carmanos who have come and, put back into Detroit to bring those buildings back to life.
I would put Derrida on that list too.
Yeah.
I mean, Roxbury Group has saved the Metropolitan, which closed before I was born.
Right.
I'm 44, working on 45.
Yeah.
The building closed in '79, I believe it was. The David Whitney Building, the Professional Plaza, which is not necessarily my flavor of architecture, but the old hammer nail building up there
Right.
in Midtown. And now he's saving Lee Plaza. He's saving the Bonestell Theater. I mean, his name belongs at the top of any list of patron saints of preservation in this city. And again, going all out in an effort to save these buildings. So I think, yeah, you it's not one person doing it alone. Obviously, Dan Gilbert owns a lot of the properties downtown. He's done a phenomenal job. I'm so thankful as a former Free Press
Yes.
journalist to see the Free Press building saved. That was one that I was really nervous about for a long time.
Yeah.
David Stott Building. I mean, we would be here for the rest of your episode listing off all of the properties that he has built. Finally seeing something arise on the Hudson site.
Yes.
I mean, what it was like a gap-toothed smile in the city skyline. Where right there on Woodward, you had that god-awful underground parking garage with those girders poking
Right.
out. So seeing something built there, huge.
Yeah.
And so again, who could have possibly seen any of this happening as Detroit was careening toward bankruptcy? I certainly am not that good of a prognosticator.
Yeah. I don't think any of us could have imagined what we see. All right. Historicdetroit.org. I encourage anyone who's interested in the history of Detroit buildings. History of our city in general, that's a tremendous repository of that history. It is there's article about buildings, there are photos about buildings, there you pay homage to the architects that created designed and helped create these buildings. and there's an opportunity to support this effort as well, so that this history remains. In I guess a few words, or you know, tell me about the site in terms of what else you have hoped to accomplish over these many years of blood, sweat, and tears that you put into this project, Dan.
Well, when I started it, again, buildings were being demolished. Lafayette Building, Tiger Stadium, you know, there were a bunch of them that didn't survive. And so the idea was to try to get people to stop and think twice before they fired up that bulldozer. And things have changed, right? I think that there's definitely more of a preservation mindset in Detroit now than there was. So really now it's just become trying to celebrate the history that happened in a lot of these buildings and tell the stories of people. I think that, you know, there were so many buildings that not only still stand, but that have been demolished, that I'm still learning about things. Yeah. But also, as I've continued to do this for so darn long now, I'm starting to pursue some other avenues to try to tell the story of our city. And in November, Phoebe Howard, formerly of the Free Press, who's one of the best writers in town, she got me really piqued by Substack, which is sort of one of those new social media horizons, which you should check out, Dave. You do well on it.
I subscribe to yours, as a matter of fact.
Oh, do you?
Yeah.
Okay, so November 30th, I launched a Substack with the idea being that there were a lot of stories that I wanted to tell that didn't really have a home or a fit on Historic Detroit. And also because I've been at Historic Detroit for so darn long now, it's easy to be overwhelmed by all of the information that's on there. So it enabled me to pick out some of those really interesting nuggets that people might miss.
Right.
And so we just wrapped up Women's History Month. I did a series on five legendary Detroit women, one of whom most people probably know, Mary Chase Perry Stratton of Pewabic, but also Johnny Mae Matthews, who was is believed to be the first black woman in the United States to start and run her own record label. And she was the one who discovered the Temptations, and she was the one who took Berry Gordy around. Looking at people like Irma Henderson, where legendary city council president, first black woman to serve on city council. People might see her name at the marina or on a park, but being able to dive into her story and talk about what made her such an inspirational figure. Ruth Ellis, black women, gay rights icon. Mm-hmm. You know, so those women's stories would not have a place on Historic Detroit, but it doesn't mean that they weren't worth telling.
All right. So historicdetroit.org. Tell me about the Substack, and if people are interested, how do they sign up to receive that? And that comes, through email, right?
It comes through email, or you go to there's an app, pings you, like we all need another notification on our phone whenever I upload something. So that's where you go. So you just go to substack.com and type in Historic Detroit. You can find it there.
Yeah.
The website, we do have a Patreon. I mean, it is incredibly expensive for all of these hosting costs and newspaper archive and genealogy subscriptions, and Helmut is a godsend with the photography. But I mean, you know, it's a lot of work to do this. So we have had a couple dozen folks who have been supporters of the site. They chip in some money, and then we send them either, you know, vintage Detroit postcards from the 1920s or 1910s, or tickets from Michigan Central Station that I bought off of a homeless individual who used to live in the station named Catfish back in the day. So, you know, we try to give them an incentive, T-shirts, et cetera. But really, at the end of the day, it's not my job. It's my passion, and it's something that I do because I love this city. Yeah. And I love the story of not only the buildings, but the people who were here. And so I'm going to do it until, and as long as I'm around, I'm going to do it, right? And, if they want to check it out, we're also on social. I mean, we have about 85,000 followers on Instagram and Facebook. I was one of the folks who deleted their Twitter, but so we're not there anymore. But you can check us out on social media as well. And every day we try to post either a on this date in Detroit history post, whether the cornerstone was laid for Olympia or a building opened, a building closed. Lou Gehrig collapsed on the staircase of the Book Cadillac Hotel. Those types of nuggets. So if you're at all interested in that, there's not a way to subscribe to those updates. But I mean, if you follow us, you will see them.
And frankly, over the last 10, 15 years, a lot of people have fallen in love with Detroit or fallen in love with Detroit all over again. So again, this is a way to further that love for the city of Detroit. We mentioned the books, Lost Detroit, Stories Behind the Motor City, and what? Forgotten Landscape, Landmarks of Detroit, and Greetings from Detroit as well. You've been a busy man doing all this work.
I'd like to say that I've been blessed with not having a dull career, whether it's Pulitzer Prizes at the Free Press, reopening the train station, working with Mike Duggan. I've lived a very blessed life and a really exciting career.
Let's mention Duggan, who you work for. He has decided that he's not going to run again, is going to run for governor instead. A lot of this progress, over the last period of years, with help from many others, has happened on Duggan's watch as mayor. As he will depart the scene and there will be someone new at City Hall, look into your crystal ball. What does that tell you about the future of continued progress going forward?
It's, I wish I knew. I mean, I think that you're absolutely right. When we look back, historians will look back at this period in Detroit history. Detroit would not be where it is without Mike Duggan's leadership over the past decade plus. He will go down as one of the greatest mayors in Detroit history, unquestionably. Yeah, he certainly had a lot of help. Bankruptcy, clearing a lot of the bad debt off the books, friendly administrations in Washington and the Obama and Biden administration sending hardest hit funds and other resources to demolish blight. I mean, yeah, he had help, but at the same time, you could give anybody millions of dollars. It doesn't mean that they're going to be able to perform miracles, right? And I think that when we get ready to hand over the keys to another mayor. Obviously, a lot of really interesting candidates, people with experience, people from different backgrounds. I think that the mayor has gotten the ball rolling long as a lot of those programs, specifically the Strategic Neighborhood Fund, which is one of the things, the programs I worked on when I worked in the Doug administration. That's a really, really important program. You keep those things going and continue to build, not just on what he did. I'm not saying that the next mayor has to just keep Duggan policies and programs going, but I mean, taking a look at those things and keeping the good going and keeping that progress moving. I think, the city is huge. 139 square miles. We've seen a lot of progress in the neighborhoods. There's obviously still a lot of work to go. Keeping the focus on the neighborhoods now. That's the next chapter in Detroit's comeback story, I think. I mean, it has been ongoing. Obviously, Mayor Duggan has done a lot of work in the neighborhoods, but the next mayor is going to have to keep that progress going. And, I look at areas of the city, like when I bought my first house in Hubbard Farms in Southwest Detroit for, I think it was $125,000 back in 2007, and seeing those houses sell for $300,000 now. You need to keep the focus on affordable housing. Mayor Duggan's done a great job with that. So we have to keep that that going, but also things that create more homeownership opportunities for Detroiters. You know, so stay tuned. I mean, I wish I had a crystal ball. I think that obviously Council President Sheffield is, a lot of people think that she is the front runner, but I wouldn't count out some of these other folks too. I mean, obviously Santiel Chinkins, Fred Durhall. I mean, Pastor Kinlock, you go down the list and it's like, wow, this is a much better lineup of candidates for mayor than we've had in quite some time, when usually it was just one. Like we had one good one. Not to be throwing shade at the Tom Barrows of the world or whatever. But I mean, I think that you have a lot of choices, and I'm going to be following this as closely as a lot of other Detroiters to see who I'll be casting my ballot for as a proud resident of the city.
We're going to talk about other impactful people in the redevelopment of Detroit more specifically after we pause for a moment for Sherm's Candy to tell you about our sponsor. Have a sweet tooth and a love for Michigan? Sherm's Candy is the perfect place to satisfy both. Sherm's specializing in delicious candies, all shaped like the Mitten State itself. Choose from classic Michigummies for a delightful taste of gummy goodness, or if you're looking for a richer flavor experience, indulge in decadent chocolate Michigummies. And for those who prefer a tart and tangy treat, pucker up for sour Michigummies. Sherm's Candy doesn't forget about your furry friends either. They offer Michipups, a tasty treat made just for dogs. Many fine retailers across Michigan carry Sherm's Candy, or you can order online at shermscandy.com. Speaking today with Dan Austin, the creator, webmaster for historicdetroit.org, journalist, former Duggan administration member, director of communications for Michigan Central Station. We're talking about buildings in Detroit, architecture, history, and the like. We mentioned a few names, Gilbert Derrida in particular, but there's some others who helped get the ball rolling for redevelopment efforts in Detroit. I'm talking about Chuck Forbes. I'm talking about Mike Ilitch, talking about Peter Karmanos, who did work before, you know, Dan Gilbert made the decision to move to downtown Detroit and begin his work there. And how about a word on Chuck Forbes? And I don't know all the history, but I know what was the State Theater is now the Fillmore, the Fox Theater. He owned those theaters, right? And the Fox before Mike Ilitch took control and eventually refurbished that incredible palace.
Chuck Forbes is a legend, one of my heroes. I mean, Chuck was from that pre-Gilbert, pre-Ilitch era of Detroit where, you know, not just residents, but businesses were fleeing the city. Buildings going dark left and right, and people like Chuck, the late Michael Higgins, they wanted to save these buildings. And without Chuck Forbes, you might not be seeing Smokey Robinson or whoever at the Fox Theater. I mean, he stepped in at a period where things were certainly going downhill and going downhill fast for the city. And preserved a lot of these places. So Chuck is definitely a hero. He did not have the financial resources that a Gilbert or an Ilitch or some of these other folks did to fully top to bottom renovate or restore some of these properties. But without Chuck, I fear that we would have lost a lot more of our city's historic architecture.
Yeah. And how about then at this time period, the significance of the Fox Theater, with Ilitch kind of riding to the rescue there and redeveloping that, putting it back together in all of its grandeur.
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Fox Theater, it's a National Historic Landmark for a good reason. The theater was not abandoned when the Ilitches stepped in to restore it, but I mean, that was really the first major investment in Detroit's historic architecture in possibly ever. I don't know. I mean, those buildings, a lot of them you saw closing. The Buick Cadillac closed in 84. The Statler closed in 76, 77. Madison Lennox, you can just go down the list. Broderick Tower was like around 85, I think. So while people were turning the lights off and then hitting 8 Mile, the Ilitch family came in and took the theater over from Chuck Forbes and turned it into, polished it up and turned it into this gem that is still one of the most stunning places I've ever been. And I've been lucky enough to go to Europe. I mean, it's up there for me with places like, Versailles and some of these other palaces. I mean, it is absolutely gorgeous. And though it has been, oh man, what, 30 something years since, which is hard to believe. It makes you feel old. I remember when they reopened it, back in like 98, I think it was. But I'm hopeful that there are other properties that will see that similar treatment. I mean, we saw the Ilitch family also restored the Hotel Eddystone, which was a building that was earmarked. Unfortunately, he chose not to save the Park Avenue next door, but I mean, one is better than none. And so we're seeing a lot of those types of buildings that have languished for years. And I think that there are a couple other buildings in their portfolio that they've had for a long time that Women's City Club, they've been working on that for a long time. And I know that that is going to be a show place over there on Park Avenue. It's an incredibly important building. So stay tuned. We'll continue to see these buildings, these historic places, reopen to the public. The Bonestell Theater, another one. We talked about David Derrida earlier in the podcast. That is a theater where over the years, it was opened as a synagogue designed by Albert Kahn. Then it was converted by C. Howard Crane, the architect who did the Fox Theater and what is now the Fillmore, what is now the Detroit Opera House, turned into a playhouse. And then a lot of that grandeur was painted over, just whitewashed for reasons that I can't explain. I mean, this was an era when people were punching drop ceilings through ornate plaster and putting, so they put fluorescent lights in, getting rid of the chandeliers. That Mad Men era. I wish I could explain it, but I can't. But anyway, David Derrida and the Roxbury team are working to undo that damage and restore the Bonestell to its 1920s grandeur. It's just such an amazing time to be a Detroiter and appreciator of historic architecture when you see a lot of these properties coming back online. I think there are a couple downtown. The State Savings Bank, which has been owned by the Gilberts for a couple of years now, that was rescued by Gilbert when the owner of the Penobscot building wanted to demolish it for a parking garage, you might recall.
I do.
An incredibly important building, got a chance to go inside of it late last year. So there's still more to come, and as much a restoration and renovation that we have seen, there's more downtown, and then of course in the neighborhoods. I'm really hopeful that we will continue to see investment in a lot of these gorgeous historic apartment buildings. I live in District 7. District 7 represent. And over in the Dexter Linwood area, there are some of the most beautiful Art Deco apartment buildings, and that's a Strategic Neighborhood Fund area. I'm hopeful to see that. You look at buildings like the Southwest YMCA on Clark Avenue on Clark Park, that's been abandoned for 20 something years. So there's still plenty of opportunity for people to come in and rescue a lot of these gems. Just because downtown no longer is an architectural graveyard littered with abandoned skyscrapers doesn't mean that there's not more work to be done. I would be remiss, I almost forgot, the Broadhead Armory. I'm really hopeful that the Detroit Parade Company follows through with its plans to save a portion of that building and turn that into yet another gem on the Detroit River and the riverfront. And then, of course, we'll see what happens with the old Uniroyal site. So I could go on and on and on, Dave.
And the Renaissance Center and what the redevelopment that could occur there to open up more of the riverfront to residents and create a whole new space that really is limited now because of the design of that incredible structure.
Yeah, the Renaissance Center.
I know, I know.
We probably don't have time to get into all of it, but it is certainly an iconic building. And there, when you think of Detroit
Yeah.
skyline, the Renaissance is front and center. That said, it is not a very friendly building
No.
to use or to work in, and the conversion to residential would be very challenging. I believe the Bedrock folks when they say that. It's an awful lot of office space. I'm not crazy about the renderings that I've seen, but also acknowledge that it is unrealistic, even with Detroit's fortunes turning around in a post-COVID work from home world, that the entire Renaissance Center can be saved. So, cities evolve. And things change. I can't imagine the city skyline without any of the Renaissance Center. And again, I guess the question becomes, again, I'm not a designer, I'm not an architect. Is that the renderings we've been presented, are those the best options
Yeah.
that we have? But certainly, as Bedrock has said, as Mayor Duggan has said, and I agree, we can't have two giant vacant towers on the Detroit riverfront for decades. I mean, as you noted, David Drita said that, and I agree, that because it cost more money to demolish a lot of those buildings than the land underneath it was worth, and those buildings were saved. Yes, that is true. With the Renaissance Center, I don't know whether that's really an apples to apples comparison. And I shudder to think about those buildings standing, several of those towers standing empty. And work from home is here to stay.
Yeah.
I'm talking to you from home. Things are changing. So, let's see what happens. But I'm thankful that they're saving part of the Renaissance Center, but I'm not going to be chaining myself to Tower 500 or whatever, if the wrecking balls show up.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Not like some other buildings. All right, we're going to have to wrap this up, but we could talk all day. And again, I encourage anyone interested in Detroit history, the history of the fantastic buildings that are there. There's so many other things we haven't got into that we could. Maybe we'll have to have Dan back and talk more about it. But as historicdetroit.org, again, is the website. Go there, enjoy it. You can spend hours there. I'm telling you, from my own experience, you'll spend hours there. There's home, the great homes, mansions in Detroit as well are all covered there on that website as well. But as we wrap up today, Dan, if I said, Dan, your favorite building in Detroit, that you've written about, that is included on the website, what is it?
That's like asking a parent to choose their favorite child, Dave.
I was the favorite child, I'm sure.
I think that I would go with that's still standing, we're talking about.
Sure, yeah.
I think I'm going to go with the Metropolitan Building,
Yeah.
which we talked about that David Derrida and Roxbury saved. Not only is it just a really beautiful building with incredible views at the Monarch Club at the top,
Yes.
but it's also where I was lucky enough to marry my wife.
Oh.
And so for that reason alone, it has ascended to the top. But obviously, Guardian, Fisher Building. I mean, I could go on and on. Trains. Oh my God, I'm the comms director of Michigan Central. Michigan Central Station is my favorite building. Beyond Michigan Central Station, the Metropolitan Building would probably
Yeah.
would be up there.
Well, that's the proper PR comment to
That's a
make.
PR gaffe. PR 101. My favorite building is Michigan Central Station.
Yeah. Well, I worked in had the pleasure of working in the Fisher Building for a number of years as well. 21st floor, WJR, Golden Tower of the Fisher Building. It is a fantastic, fantastic building as well. We were married at St. Hyacinth Church in Detroit. Another fantastic building, religious building. We didn't even get into churches, but they're covered on your website as well.
Yeah, I think that the churches are a real, it's not the easiest thing in the world. You can create only so many brew pubs and churches.
Right.
And Detroit has a lot
Yeah.
of historic churches. And I've heard that a couple others are getting ready to close. So that's a priority.
Yeah.
And if I had $1 million or many millions of dollars, I would certainly want to buy one of those. So I did see an article about a church in Indian Village being turned into a house. Lots of work to do. But man, yeah, churches, Dave. Let's talk churches next
All
time.
right, we'll do that.
Because I know we gotta go, but that is certainly from a preservation standpoint, next to schools, the real preservation concern, I think, for a lot of folks.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll leave it there today. Dan, thanks so much. Thank you for all the work in creating historicdetroit.org and for the books. We mentioned three of them. They're available. Look for those as well to really delve into the significance of historic buildings and architecture in the city of Detroit. We have so much to experience and to love in the city of Detroit. Dan Austin, thank you for the time today, and we will get you back and talk more about these great buildings and the history of Detroit, which you chronicle so well. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Dave.
Look forward to next time. And as always, we thank you for joining us on the Dave Llewellyn podcast. Thanks to producer director Josh Bowron as well. Most of all, to you for listening. We are on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, wherever you find your podcasts. Share this with a friend, tell them about it, and join us for these conversations and more to come. Until next time, stay safe, be kind. The Dave Llewellyn podcast is sponsored by Sherm's Candy, a Michigan-based company that specializes in awesome-tasting candy that's in the shape of Michigan.